Good morning, church. Thank you, worship team. You know, week after week, I come here and I don't even have to really wonder, will we worship? And we have a lot to be thankful for. Lots of people play lots of roles in this, but worship team, as you're having a seat, just know how much we appreciate the effort you put into... Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And they do it with the right heart. They're not performers. That's the quickest way to get kicked off the team. They are servants. They love Jesus and they use their gifts to lead us week after week. So, hey, I don't know how much you know about sheep. Let me ask it as a question. How many of you spent much time with sheep or on a farm? Or, okay, one, two, three, four. Right, I get it. That's good. It actually sounds like a goat more than a sheep. But anyway, so you can learn a lot about yourself by learning about sheep. Did you know that? I was reminded again this week, I did a little further dig and deeper research on sheep because I don't know about sheep except about springtime each year when we drive down the Willamette Valley, maybe on the way to see one of our kids at college, we see a bunch of lambs, like newborns, and it's just really cool, and you know, Debbie's like, no, drive. I'll watch, you know, and it's really cool because it's, I mean, they're just adorable, you know, but I don't know a lot about them, so I did a little further dig, and I'm going to share some of that in just a moment, but first, how many of you know the name King David? All right, so he, of course, was a mighty warrior and a fearless king of Israel who reigned in Israel for 40 years, okay? We know that. That's sort of the basic lowdown when it comes to David. Big deal. Jesus, in fact, said of himself, I am the son of David, okay? I'm the son of David. That's giving all sorts of cred to David and connection to himself. But did you know that he reveals, David does, something about his secret to success in the most who said moms don't know which baby's theirs, right? Oh, baby, I love it. Most of us dads go, I didn't hear anything. You hear anything? Anyway, okay. I love it. Back to David. His secret, he reveals it, and he does so in a kind of a surprising way, I'm going to say. I'm going to call it the most beloved of his 73 psalms that he authored. Did you know that as well? Almost half of the, known as the Psalter, I just got to say it, you're a miracle-working mother, I'll tell you what. I agree, candy helps. So anyway, he reveals something, I think, back to that, of his secret to success, because he was unequaled in his success, save Jesus, right, as king of Israel. And he reveals something of that in a very beloved psalm. Most of us have heard it at memorials, but it's worthy of sharing any time. It's the 23rd Psalm, and it begins with those wonderful words, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside quiet or still waters. He restores my soul, and it goes on and on. Beautiful language, and you hear it again and again. My shepherd, he leads me, he restores my soul. And he continues in that kind of vein, David does. He guides me along the path of righteousness for his name's sake. And then he talks about reality that we all have lived. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will put that together. Okay, that doesn't work normal for most people. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, he tells us why. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. I mean, he's the comforting God, and he expressed it. You prepare a table for me before my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. And then it ends, verse 6, with that wonderful kind of conclusion that we put to song. Maybe you remember it. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Surely goodness, joy, and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And then it hits high, but anyway, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, right? It's a great psalm, fantastic words. David, of course, was a shepherd, and that's, I think, why he could later in life write such intimate words. You expect somebody to say, well, you want to know why I'm so successful? You want to know why there's peace in the land and I'm king? And he would talk about the stuff of being a warrior. And he would talk about the secret to fearlessness. But I think he talked intimately like that because he goes back, it's not hard for him to do that, to his minimum wage teenage job as a shepherd. He was way before a king. He took care of sheep. That meant he was lonely and he had time to think. That meant he and sheep were together. And he didn't just read about sheep, he knew sheep. And he knew of his relationship to sheep. And that's what's behind the 23rd Psalm. How informed are you about sheep? It's kind of the question I started with. This might blow you away. This is sort of hitting for the fence right now. But do you know that the Bible refers to sheep more than 500 times? Not a single reference to cats. None. It's just not there. Not there. It's not there. You can't shake it out. It's just not there. Okay? But sheep, more than 500 references. And here's the grabber. Here's a sub-point to that. Many of them are about the shepherd-sheep relationship. That's a big deal. I'm going to give you a small sampling, and I'll go through it slowly enough. They'll be up here. You don't have to jump real fast and move around real quick. But they are coming up. We got nothing. Okay, how about this? Psalm 95. Okay, when they come up, you'll be able to see them. They're not there. Okay, good. Okay, so you know this by a song too. Psalm 95, verses 6 and 7. Come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our God, our Maker, for He is our God, and we are the sheep of His pasture, and the flock under His care. That's Psalm 95, 6 and 7. Here's another one. I love this one. Isaiah 40, verse 11. He tends His flock like a shepherd. Listen. He tends His flock like a shepherd. He gathers His lambs in His arms and carries them close to His heart. He gently leads those that have young. You getting the image here? Isaiah 40, verse 11. Here's another one. And I wouldn't be accurate if I didn't include this one. It has to do with the dark side of sheep. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his or her own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. Isaiah 53, verse 6. It's true. Sheep aren't always easy to manage, right? And the Bible is agreeing with that, Isaiah 53, verse 6. Here's another one. I will tend my sheep. I need to give you a quick background. Ezekiel 34 and Jeremiah 23, you can write those down. Ezekiel 34 and Jeremiah 23, this is when the people were exiled. They had gone to captivity. And in the exile, there was all sorts of judgment coming upon God's people because they had wandered from him. And both Jeremiah, who stayed with a group of people in Jerusalem, and Ezekiel, who went to Babylon, they were contemporaries, both prophets, and both of them called out bad shepherds. Both of them were like up to here with, you know something? You leaders of my people had a chance to lead them well, to speak the truth to them, and you failed. So Ezekiel 36 and Jeremiah 23, Ezekiel 34 and Jeremiah 23 are both of those prophets calling them out. Here's Ezekiel 34, verses 15 and 16. I myself will tend my sheep. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. Can I translate that for us today? You're fired. You bad shepherds, you're done. You're through. Tell my people the truth. Feed my sheep. Now you're understanding John 21 a little better when I say it like that, because Peter had failed. And Jesus, in that near the last hours of his life, last days of his life, before he ascends back to heaven where he is now, just before that, he goes and finds Peter and restores him. And he says to Peter, do you love me? Yeah, I do. Do you love me? Yeah, I do. Do you love me? Yeah, I do. Then feed my sheep. God says, because you shepherds failed to do that, you're fired. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays, says the sovereign Lord. I will bind up the injured. Is that tender? And strengthen the weak. But the sleek and strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. Ezekiel 34, 15 and 16. Here's one more image I want you to hear. Matthew 9, verse 36. It actually gives you, you see Jesus. It says he's going around villages and towns, cities, everywhere he went. He healed hurting people, and he taught hungry people, okay? So Jesus did that everywhere. And then this observation is made that I'm convinced you and I would not have seen had Jesus not given us sight to see it. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, he looks out upon the people and he sees this crowd, and it says that he had compassion on the people. And then it tells us why. Because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Matthew 9, verse 36. So the unmistakable impression you come away with when you read the Bible, when it comes to the shepherd and his sheep, is that the Lord looks after his sheep in love. Will you please write that down? Because you need to. He looks after his sheep in love. So I've tried to, and it would have been more impactful if you saw the visual to this, but hopefully you get this sense that God is really this amazing shepherd. And he cares for his sheep. As challenging as that is at times, he does so in love. Because you're bringing together these various, combining the attributes of sheep. I even, in honesty, shared the dark side. We, like sheep, have gone astray. Brings up that hymn, Lord, prone to wander. Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. We do that. By the way, that was a 22-year-old young pastor who wrote those words. So here's the deal. Bring together the attributes of sheep with the clear love that the good shepherd has. And then you start to appreciate this claim I'm making, that the Lord looks after his people in love. So I want to stick with sheep facts for just a sec. There's three I want you to write down, okay? So this will lead to good lunchtime conversation, unless you're having lamb. If you're having lamb. So here it is, all right? Three of them. First one, sheep lack a sense of direction. I owe much of this to research by Philip Keller, who's with Jesus now, but he was a great, he was a shepherd of sheep up in Canada and had lots and lots of sheep, a huge gang of sheep. You're like, this gang, really? It's true. It's true, isn't it? If you know sheep, they're also called a gang. Which could be another sermon, I guess. But so Philip Keller wrote a lot with insight about sheep and the shepherd. I would also to another a website filled with shepherds and their insights called Sheep 101. So it's really good. You can check that out. But the first one is sheep lack a sense of direction. That means we get lost easily. I'm looking at people that have apps on their phone that tell them how to get from point A to point B. So clearly it's not that kind of directions that we lack. We get confused and we wander. It's that kind. So the first is sheep lack a sense of direction. Secondly, sheep are vulnerable to predators. I was fascinated to learn that sheep instinct is to flee, not fight. There's a good reason. They're not good in fights. They're not good at all. But they got a pretty good kick. It's a short burst of speed, and then they get pretty much taken over by most predators. So they're vulnerable to predators. Alone, please write this down. Sheep are defenseless. I would call them a sitting duck, but that would change the metaphor, right? Get what I mean? Sheep are defenseless by themselves, which leads to my third thought. So sheep lack a sense of direction. Sheep are vulnerable to predators. And thirdly, sheep find, therefore, safety in numbers. After fleeing, let's say a predator comes and they scatter. The sheep just flee for their lives. Then they will stop when the pursuit is over and interestingly regroup. They will come together again and very often stare at their foe. Like there's somehow an intimidating effect. A bunch of sheep together going, and they don't realize maybe that the wolf is going, let's see, I don't want you, I'll take you and you, but whatever. Listen to this quote from Sheep 101. Their only protection is to stay together in a group. When gathered as a flock, sheep are less vulnerable to predators than they are when scattered. Are you hearing this, people? Just like sheep, God's people experience their greatest protection when we're together in community. That's what this is about, what we're here for, what we're made for. Given those facts, I want to read words this morning in the New Testament in John chapter 10. Would you turn there? The fourth gospel. And of course, given how you helped me read or quote from memory, the 23rd Psalm, you probably know already where we're heading in John chapter 10. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the four Gospels that give us the reliable information that we build our lives on as Christians about Jesus. And the fourth gospel is John chapter 10. And John 10 reveals that Jesus is, in fact, not just a shepherd, but a good shepherd who looks after his sheep, as we're saying this morning, in love. So let's just read this a little bit. Follow me, starting in verse 1. "Very truly I tell you, Pharisees," so he's talking to Pharisees, which are a tough crowd, "anyone who does not enter the sheep pen or sheep fold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a robber." Pay attention to how often that expression pops up in this short passage. "The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run from a stranger because they do not recognize a stranger's voice." Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not get it. They did not understand what he was telling them. So listen carefully, church. "Therefore, Jesus said again, very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees a wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep." Sounds a little bit like over in Ezekiel 34 and Jeremiah 23 that we just talked about, right? "Not my sheep. I'm out of here." And then again in verse 14, "I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not my own, not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd." Clearly a reference to Gentiles and Jews. Verse 17, "The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." And like most of the time that Jesus taught, there was mixed reaction. Notice how the next two verses read. "The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, he's got a demon. He's demon-possessed and raving. He's crazy. He's raving mad. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" That last statement takes you before to chapter 9, before this section we just read, and takes you to the man that was born blind and all the controversy that came. Hey, who sinned was the assumption and the question that came to Jesus. And Jesus said, no, there's no sin going on here. He was born blind. And then he makes that ointment, applies it to the man's eyes, and tells him to go wash down at the pool of Siloam, which is a place I stood at less than a month ago. It's really cool, all right? In Jerusalem, just outside the gate. All right. I guess inside the gate. So let's start with a couple of observations. Jesus is the gate into the sheep fold or sheep pen. Verse 1, what is a sheep pen? Now, for not being a sheep guy, I'm just kind of guessing it's a corral, okay? Some sort of a pen where sheep are gathered. Remember, scattered, they're vulnerable. So it's a priority to gather the sheep. So let's just kind of make the connection. It's the church. It's a gathering together of sheep. So at night, sheep are gathered into this sheep pen, and they're there for protection's sake. A sheep pen is a cave. It can be a shed of some kind or some kind of a protected area like a corral. Okay, it was common in those days for a shepherd, in fact, to go into the pen with the sheep and very often bed down with the sheep. It was that kind of intimacy that we're talking about. With me? So you got sheep that are kind of out there and they've been grazing and they came back in. There's a commotion. They get in the pen or the sheepfold, some of our Bibles say, and they're there with their shepherd. And the shepherd will bed down with them for the night. So here Jesus is going on to say in verses 7 and 9 that he is the gate. Do you see that? So he changes it a little bit. Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. So Jesus is the gate letting sheep into the pen or the family or flock of God, the church of God. They all work in the analogy Jesus is giving. And we know from what Jesus said, if you were to skip forward just four chapters, you come to John 14, verse 6, where Jesus said, remember, we're searching out the idea that he's the gate. I am the way, Jesus said, the truth and the life. No one gets into the sheep pen except through me. No one gets to see the Father except through this gate. Now, I just need to stop quickly and tell you something that's absolutely true, and it's part of my teaching priority. So listen very carefully. You will only be counted as one of his sheep if you come to Christ. No one is born into his flock. As adorable as our children are, they're not darling little sheep. They are darling and little, but they are sinners. And they do not belong to the family of God by pedigree, and they do not belong as a grandchild. God has no grandchildren. Please hear me. I'm not ripping on anybody's kids, and I have three of my own. But they all had to come into the sheep pen. They all had to establish a relationship with the gate, Jesus, in order to find their way into the family of God and the flock of God. Please understand that. You don't enter through pedigree. Hey, I'm a McCracken, I'm in. Or performance. Hey, I'm a pastor, I'm in. You don't. No one is grandfathered. All must come through the gate. And the gate has a name. Jesus Christ. Amen? I love telling you that, and I don't mean any insult by it. I mean a corrective course. If you've thought you're in because God loves all little lambs, realize you got to come through Jesus. He's the gate. Now for a second important image, and it's just everywhere in this thing, but verse 11 and verse 14, it repeats. 11, I am the good shepherd, he says. Jesus is the good shepherd. Verse 14, I'm the good shepherd. Question, what makes a shepherd good? And think about that. I thought, good shepherd. So I'm an under shepherd. Does that make me bad? I mean, in contrast to Jesus, what there's a good shepherd, Jesus. What's a bad shepherd? He tells us five times, by the way, in here. We read it already. Look at verse 11. It's the first of the five. The good shepherd, notice, lays down his life for the sheep. It's the first. Then he brings it up again four verses later, verse 15. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I laid down my life for the sheep. You getting the theme here? Again, the very next, two verses later, verse 17. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. Then twice in verse 18, no one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to do so, to lay it down. So Jesus is the good shepherd. And what makes him good is because he puts it on the line for his sheep. He lays down his life. In contrast, verse 12 tells about a hired gun, a hired hand, as we're told in this story. The hired hand, he's got no skin in the game. Hired hand is not the shepherd and doesn't own the sheep. So when he sees trouble, he's, and he takes off. He's got nothing riding on it. Not so Jesus. Now, that's a start from John. Before we wrap this sermon, let me make an uncomfortable contrast. All right? Because this would be a feel-good message up to this point. There's an uncomfortable contrast. And it's a contrast between if Jesus is the good shepherd, we get that part, we've established that part, who guards his sheep, then who is the greatest predator to God's people? Satan is the right answer. The devil. He goes by a lot of different names. Deceiver. Prince of darkness. And on it goes. In this same passage, Jesus sounds the alarm that the devil is determined to destroy sheep. He wants to kill, and he will not be denied. He will, in a determined way, do what he can to take sheep out, scatter and destroy. So verse 1 takes on a different color now when I say that. Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, climbs in another way, is a thief and a robber. If you ask me to define thief and robber, I don't have any nice words to say about them. Any of you been robbed? Any of you had somebody break in and steal something? You know, we had somebody smash our window and took a blouse out of the front seat. Didn't fit me anyway, so whatever, you know. But all right? Oh, I got nothing good to say about thieves and robbers. Verse 8, he brings them up again. All who come before me are thieves and robbers. That's the devil we're talking about. And then he gets even more explicit. Verse 10, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. How is that for a job description? Yeah, so what are you bringing? What do you got to offer? Well, I steal, I kill, and I destroy. That's what he does. And Jesus doesn't leave us guessing about that. Verse 12, the hired hand is not like the shepherd. When he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. So remember earlier we noted that sheep are vulnerable. That was one of the things I had you write down to predators. Turns out I had no idea just how vulnerable. I learned that predators, this is sheep talk now again, exploit sheep in alarming numbers. Lots of different predators go after sheep, okay? But they all do it in one basic way. First, the numbers, and these are a few years old. They've only increased since. Over a third of a million sheep are consumed by predators every year in America alone. Like 300,000 sheep consumed by predators. And that comes with a price tag. If you're a shepherd, you just lost about $20 million in your flock. Okay? Spread across the country. Want to guess the number one killer? Cats. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Just a joke. actually coyotes. It's coyotes. Right behind them is dogs. Yeah, so I hate to admit that because I'm a dog guy. But anyway, there it is. Coyotes, okay? These are grim facts. Now, can you guess how they do it? Remember I said they do it the same way. Here it is. Write this down. By stealth and separation. I'm looking at people. The lights are going, oh, I get it. Sneaky. And he separates these predators. Let's make it about people now, okay? So the devil will use subtle enticements to separate you and me from community. All right, remember the community is the family, the flock. And the devil will do subtly entice us. They'll pull you apart. Most aren't even aware that it's happening. So he isolates and then he annihilates. That's what he does. He isolates, then he annihilates, and it works. People, it works again and again. So let me make it really practical right now, okay? When someone fades from fellowship, it rarely is for something better. Hebrews 3, 12 and 13, I put to memory years ago because I thought, that's it. Those words describe what I see all the time. It says, see to it that none of you has an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it's still called today, so that you might not be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. The front three words there pull you right out of your chair right now. See to it. There's something you can do about this. And the Bible doesn't soft pedal this fact. It says, see to it. Here's a problem. That you could be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. See to it. See to what? Encouraging one another. Protecting the flock. Coming together on a regular, continuous basis. Because so much is riding on this. That's why Peter warned. I don't know if we have nothing. No slide. Okay. Let me just tell you. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. Okay, you guys probably have memorized it. Be sober. Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Why? For your adversary, the predator, the devil, prowls about as a roaring lion to mess with you, seeking whom he may eat, devour. Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. They just killed a cougar, a mountain lion, on a trail around Mount Hood this week. You know, those are scary when they're near people. The devil's scary when he's near God's people. That's why Peter says, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. That's alert. You see in my face? That's neurotic too, but anyway, you get... Right, you get the idea? And then, that's why Paul warned, watch out. We are not unaware of Satan's schemes. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11. What is a scheme? I looked it up. It is a secret or devious plan. That means Satan would prefer to fly under the radar. What I'm saying right now, and not be noticed. But Jesus revealed his scheme in, I know this is really corny, but the faux news alert. Verse 10. Jesus is calling Satan out. He's coming to steal, kill, and destroy sheep. Would you please listen very careful, church? It is always, without exception, a concern when someone steps back and pulls away. Just let that sit there for a minute and think of people right now. You don't need a prompting. You're thinking of people. It's always concerning when someone steps back and pulls away. When you see it happen, out of love, pursue. Pursue. Don't tackle them. Don't corner them. Just pursue them. And do it in love, and they'll know. They'll know you're doing it the right way. Hey, I care about you. It's about protecting community. I cringe when I ask someone who I haven't seen, they haven't been around for a while, and I ask them, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you lately. And this is it. This is what I hear. I've been gone a little while, and I say, it seemed like a few months or whatever. And they'll say, I've been gone, and I've been real busy, but almost like they anticipate my next question. They say, but me and Jesus, we're great. We're great. I've been away for a while, a few months, and I've been real busy. And they're telling somebody who's never busy, apparently. You get what I'm saying? And I'm not ridiculing that, because some of you have said that. Okay, so they say I've been real busy, but they want me to know Jesus and them, they're fine. Really? How silly of Jesus to stress gathering together in community called the church if you can be just fine for months, sometimes more. Without it. Do you see the waste of words by Jesus? That's crazy. Seriously, Jesus, you and me are fine. Well, then why would Jesus ever say, stick close together, protect community? I mean, let me go a step further. Church, can I just put it out there? Church is a colossal waste of time. If Jesus and you can be just fine without blowing your weekend by coming to church. I mean, really? Why bother? Get people to think that way long enough, and the outcome, if you're the devil, is another stealthy kill. And it's an avoidable outcome. I'd like you to bow your heads with me this morning. You can tell my heart because I love you, and I don't love you anywhere near how the Good Shepherd loves you. But I feel like he wants me to tell you these things today. In great love for his sheep, the Good Shepherd pleads, stay in community. Your only protection is to stick together. Don't let anybody and don't let anything separate you from the flock, the community. Stay protected from the predator by staying close and refusing to scatter. Lord, don't let us be lulled or tricked, separated and made to think it's just fine. Help us, Lord, to heed your wisdom and follow your ways by living close in community. Your church, your family, your flock, by being committed to one another, by staying in close fellowship with a few who know us well. And protect us, Holy Spirit, from the stealthy one in his mission to separate and destroy us. Because we really do need each other. Cause the person that's held back, we all have our reasons, from getting in a community, in a life group, because, I don't know, it went bad one time, or it's hard to get to know people, or I'm uncomfortable in places like that. Help us to get over that and move past that, and to see that, in fact, that may be a subtle lie we've listened to that's putting us at great risk. Starting this morning and every morning in the foreseeable future, we're going to have a prayer team come down to the front here. The next couple of songs, we'll finish our morning, take an offering. But during that time, we want it to be a time for you to just talk with somebody, pray with somebody, maybe after the service, just continue a conversation and visit. So we'll be standing. It won't be that conspicuous or awkward for you to just make your way up. If you want prayer, there'll be prayer team people down here in front, and they have badges on, so they're easily identified. So feel free to do that as we respond to Jesus in this time.